Good morning to you all, and welcome to the ninth lecture of the 2018 Palliative Care Lecture Series. Hospice New Zealand would like to thank you and acknowledge Cancer Research Trust New Zealand for their generous support and funding to deliver these free lectures. The lecture today will be recorded and it will be available on the Hospice New Zealand website. Please be aware there will be an opportunity for questions at the end of the presentation. We would now like to introduce our guest speaker today, Nigel Rowling, who is a counsellor at Rainbow Place Hospice Waikato. Welcome, Nigel. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you. Moerina koutou. Thank you. That was a warm welcome. I'd like to really acknowledge that it's Daylight Saving Week here in New Zealand, and if you're here today to listen to me, congratulations. Awesome. If I can, I'd like to actually start with a karakia, just in the hope of grounding myself and also grounding others. Whakataka te hau ki te uru, whakataka I hau ki tonga, ki makina kina, ki uta, ki mataratara, ki tai. I he aki ana, ti akakura, I te o. I huka, I honga, humi ai e, hui e, ta iki e. Today we'll be unpacking the grief process of a young child, and it's a case study, and we'll be looking at this case study from the perspective of her process and her relationship with me as a therapist. I'd like to acknowledge Rebecca. This is not her real name. I'd like to acknowledge Rebecca and her grief journey and what she went through. And I also want to acknowledge Mum and Rebecca for giving us permission and consent of this information to be able to present to you this today. So with that confidentiality in mind, I'd like to, and I want you guys to honour that space for Rebecca. Next slide. As we sort of look at the grief process of this young girl, I'm just mindful of my own personal grief. My grandfather died in 1981, and I remember actually being shoveled off to school on the day of his funeral. And my school at the time actually looked out over the over to the RSA across a couple of fields. And I remember the sense of sadness and pride, but also a sense of separation, knowing that my grandfather died and I was actually not getting closure on the day of his funeral. That has been quite a journey. I wanted to ask you today, as practitioners, what is it that informs your grief as a practitioner? What is it that informs your grief as a practitioner? And maybe it's a grief that's in the early years, or maybe that's a grief in your teenage years. We just want to take a moment just to think about that, and because it's a good place so that we can actually connect with other children as they grieve. Moving on, it's to some extent today that much hasn't changed for our children. There's very little research out there to talk about or unpack children's grief. And, for example, largely it is my observation that we are a death-denying society. In fact, our traditionally speaking, most grief models are based around adult grief rather than children's grief. My hopes for this presentation is that we as adults can gain more understanding of how children grieve, and through Rebecca's story we might gain more of an insight of the process of both her anticipatory grief through to bereavement. I want to take away is my hope that after this presentation I'd be able to take away some adult assumptions that children don't really know what's going on, or that children's behaviour is framed up in little regard or awareness of what might be going on in the child's life. Next slide. just want to introduce right now Rebecca to you. She's a young girl of 8 years of age, lives at home with her two sisters and mum's new partner. Rebecca is the youngest of three, and she attends a Catholic primary school, but the family don't regularly practice Catholicism. Dad has a terminal illness, and when I met Rebecca for the first time, Dad had been diagnosed with cholangiocarcinoma, stage 4, with lung metastases. And key points to point out here, it's worth noting that Rebecca has also experienced other grief and loss prior to Dad's diagnosis. Rebecca had an older cousin who suicided when she was around 6 years old, and Mum and Dad's marriage ended after Dad found out that Mum was having another relationship via text and stuff. So yeah, Rebecca is trying to make sense of Mum's new relationship, and this is quite confronting for her, as Mum's partner had just moved in. Her relationship with Mum's new partner is strained. Coupled with this dynamic, Rebecca is also tackling her dad's new relationship that he has. And since her mum and dad's divorce, Rebecca doesn't see her extended family on her dad's side, and she misses having extended holiday time with them. Next slide. At this point of this presentation, I'd like to acknowledge the work of Gordon Neufeld and his development of attachment theory. Neufeld has built on Bowlby's attachment theories and has done a lifelong work on researching children's development and attachment. Neufeld explains attachment in the following way. It's that drive or relationship characterized by the pursuit and preservation of proximity. That drive or relationship that characterized by the pursuit and preservation of proximity. In other words, right through the lifespan, we're at our very core, we're default creatures of attachment. We want connection and desire psychological contact with others. So from birth to death, we're people of attachment. Neufeld has done a lifelong work on attachment and development, and his research over the years has come up with 6 roots of attachment, which within his model. He maintains that when we offer these 6 conditions as adults or parents, children will flourish. In the early years of our life, we connect with our senses, so that's like touch, smell, sight. And Neufeld addresses children's brains as being as an alarm system. And when separation of any sort happens, anxiety and difficult feelings come to the surface. With Rebecca, her dad is dying, and she is struck with the futility of helplessness of the situation. This, as you will see, causes all manner of anticipatory grief for her, and in short, she is alarmed at the idea that she will be separated from Dad forever. My role as a person-centered therapist is to offer a therapeutic relationship that supports Rebecca in her experience and allows her to regulate her internal alarm. Next slide. Developmental considerations. So obviously not only are we looking at attachment, but also looking at the age and stage of the child. As you'll see with my work with Rebecca in this presentation, it is quite common for a child at this particular age to feel worried about what will happen to them if the parent dies. For Rebecca, she became clingy with her mum. Rebecca is aware that death is final, and she is beginning to form her own spiritual views. You'll see this play out as I present Rebecca's process to you. Trying to make sense of death, Rebecca openly asks in one particular session if her auntie was going to die. And this was because her auntie was admitted to hospital after having an acute ear infection. And so just by using that, seeing that language, you can see that she's fearful of other adults dying in her world as well. Next slide. So we're just moving into assessment here with Rebecca, and I'll be hooking my assessment on juries Te Whare Tapawha. As part of my assessment with Rebecca, working holistically is key to understanding her. She has grown up in the context of her family, culture, and society. Although this particular family are New Zealand Pākehā, and a relationship with the land, or whenua, isn't practiced per se, what we know is a child's way of being is shaped by the cultural context in which they live in. As part of working through the assessment phase with Rebecca, these are the sorts of things that I'm interested in. School context. Rebecca attends a small Catholic church, as I've already pointed out, and has a good relationship with the teacher. The teacher reports that Rebecca is engaged in school activities and is doing okay in school. Her relationships with her peers at school are solid, and she enjoys overnight stays with them and connecting with them in the weekends. And she, her network of friends is pretty solid. Although towards the end of our bereavement counselling, she was struggling with a little bit of discord. The school that Rebecca attends is a special remembrance garden where students can plant and remember loved ones that have died. This was affirming not only for Rebecca, but also for myself, as I knew the school had the capacity to be able to support Rebecca at this difficult time in her life. Some of the cultural influences, such as race, religion, and family beliefs and traditions, are taken into account during this during my assessment. What has informed the child's ideology around death and dying? Although Rebecca attends a Catholic school, her beliefs don't necessarily align with the belief of the Catholic Church. But there's a fine wrestle between what the church believes in and also what she believes in and how she's developing those beliefs. Her past grief experience of losing the whole side of the family and also a cousin to suicide. How did the family respond to that death of suicide? Those are all questions that I'm wanting to ask. Also looking at economic and social issues, local and national politics, all play into how Rebecca operates as a child. Interests and hobbies. I'm keen to know what interests and hobbies Rebecca has, and so that she can actually use some of those hobbies for self-care. And how much screen time? This is a key one for grieving children right now, what with Fortnite and Facebook and Instagram. Different ways of grieving and how they'll go to Facebook, etc., to do blogs or connecting with their peers rather than parents. All these things play into their grief process. Rightly or wrongly, this is exactly the culture that she lives in. Next slide. Family. Rebecca experienced the grief of her cousin who suicided around 4 years ago before she found out about her dad's diagnosis. I just want to point out to you guys right now that sudden death brings a plethora of unanswered questions to grief, and Rebecca touched on this issue in her counselling. Mum and Dad are divorced, and Rebecca understands the reason why Mum and Dad separated in the first instance, because, I now quote, Dad found out that Mum was texting Dad found out because Mum was texting another man. Rebecca doesn't get on with Mum's new partner, and she feels misunderstood by him. Rebecca's two older sisters annoy her, and this causes interpersonal conflict within the house. So in what way would all these things inform her anticipatory grief? And how has it been handled as a family? And I'm also wondering about what communication style this family may exhibit. Rebecca talks to her mum and has a close relationship with her. After her dad died during bereavement counselling, Rebecca talked about not only losing her dad, but also dad's side of the family because, and I quote here, mum doesn't want to have anything to do with dad's side of the family. This is a huge loss for Rebecca, and it's fragmented her sense of belonging. And you can see when we throw attachment theory on that, what could be possibly going on for Rebecca at this time. She's not only grieving her dad who's about to die, but she's also grieving the multiple losses in her wider family. Next slide. At this point, I'd just like to sort of touch on the idea of signal behaviour. And it's all I can the way that I like to think of signal behaviour is that a child operates like a walking, alive iceberg. So if you picture, if you will, the tip of the iceberg, which is the behaviour, and then underneath the surface, which you can't actually see, all of those feelings, all of those behaviours, all of those thoughts, all of those things, both culturally, I mean externally and internally, that are informing this child's grief. It's all underneath. And so signal behaviour, the little tip at the top of the waterline, is what we need to be looking out for. So, signal behaviour is the window to the child's inner world. As a counsellor, I'm wanting to cultivate curiosity about the child. What's happening with Rebecca's behaviour at school? What's happening with her at home, within the family? Is there anything Rebecca's behaviour that is usually different now from before her dad was diagnosed? For example, Rebecca was quite bubbly at school, but then slowly became isolated and detached from her classmates. Excuse me. Other signs of signal behaviours: acting aggressively, disturbed sleep, nightmares, deterioration of schoolwork, or maybe even difficulty concentrating or becoming protective. Past grief and loss for the child may bring tears and anxiety about the pending death of the loved one to the surface. For instance, in Rebecca's case, it was her mum and dad's separation, the death of her cousin and her late grandparents that informed her ideas around grief and loss. It's a normal reaction in the human coping mechanisms to emotionally wall up in order to protect the self from further pain. I'd like to call this, as a person-centered therapist, is incongruence. Engaging in trust in a trustworthy relationship, therapeutic relationship, helps the client to become more genuine or real. Modeling congruence in the relationship as a counsellor encourages the client to become more congruent or real with their emotional material. In Rebecca's case, she was very aware that putting on a mask was a lot easier than revealing how she really felt. Counselling helped Rebecca to process her feelings and began talking about her feelings to her mum a lot more and how she was experiencing her dad's death. At times, this would generate some concern for mum and cause her anxiety because she didn't have the resources to be able to actually sort of cope with the comfort of that and help her daughter soothe. But assurance on my part and normalising and education about children's grief helped mum to be present with Rebecca's grief. Next slide. A holistic approach to therapy requires attention to, and in some cases, but the basic needs of the child. For instance, the child's sleep patterns, appetite and exercise. Routine and consistency help with psychological regulation. For some of our families at Rainbow Place, This can be a struggle, wrestling with the busyness of family life, anticipatory grief or bereavement, and living in a time impoverished culture, all have has a physical effect on us. It was quickly established that Rebecca was ready for counselling. During assessment, she discloses that she feels stuck and stuck in sadness. That's why I'm here. At this point, Rebecca's breathing was shallow and her voice was quiet. Talking to Rebecca about her sadness was clearly upsetting for her. Helping her to breathe through these difficult conversations helped her nervous system to gain stable stasis. Interventions such as the 4-7-8 breathing technique, or blowing bubbles or windmills, can be a fun way to help regulate her nervous system. Helping Rebecca to identify what happens in her body when she talks about her sadness brought in new insights into her feelings. For instance, tightness in her neck or clammy hands when feeling nervous. Next slide. It could be argued that children have an innate drive for spirituality. Children have a universal curiosity about spirituality, and this can be drawn out through the child's wonder and awe and imagination. Books like Harry Potter and Goosebumps or imaginative play can promote spiritual attunement for the child. When a child has an empathetic adult standing next to them who actively listen to them and allow the child to explore the afterlife and spiritual wandering, empowers the young person or the child to actually become more spiritually involved. When children gain meaning from their grief, it lowers the chances of developing other forms of psychopathology later in the lifespan. And I'd like to suggest that there are studies out there that actually would say that when children don't and teenagers don't process their grief or the losses throughout their life appropriately, they can actually be sort of compressed and compounded, and then they end up becoming depressed, and then anxiety kicks in, and then all of a sudden, yeah, it goes on, and then suddenly they're becoming part of the mental health system. It's part of the reason why I actually do children and adolescent counselling, is because I'm keen to see the statistics in our broken mental health system lowered. Encouraging children to express their ideas around the sacred gives them a sense of connection with the deceased parent. For example, Dad is watching over me, or issues about the afterlife can be resolved simply by having the hope that one day they'll see their parent again. Next slide. So we're just going to sort of shift gears a little bit from assessment and models of therapy to actually the work that I did. And here at Rainbow Place, we like to encourage our young people to experience their feelings and to help them be aware of their stasis process, or their, you know, what happens when this complex balance of the organism or the human body goes into feelings and what happens in there. In their body, by carrying out this appropriate intervention. This intervention is usually done early in the therapeutic relationship and is a good way to build self-awareness within the child. Here, Rebecca chose three different feelings, such as happy, sad, and excited, which blew me away a little bit, because usually most kids all come up with happy, sad, or mad. But she came up with excited, which is a bit of a giggle. So asking Rebecca when she felt these feelings and where she felt them gave clear cues on where she was in her anticipatory grief. For Rebecca, she was very real and genuine. with her response, and she was very aware that what she felt. And here we see she feels sad in the heart, but she didn't want to show it, which suggests to me obviously a clear example of incongruence or putting up that wall. It was easier to be happy rather than to actually show people what she was really feeling. Being excited for Rebecca meant this was a feeling of fun. Notice the party hat and the different colours that she's used to express her way of fun, and she feels that in her head. Next slide. Here at Hospice at Rainbow Place, we like to do memory making, where we gather the family around, and they do a canvas together. As part of the anticipatory grief work, I met with Rebecca and her three sisters to connect with their dad and to talk about the strengths of their family and to be able to remember the cool holidays that they've had and some of the things that they've experienced as a family. Messy play with PVA glue, paint, glitter provided an atmosphere of fun and celebration. And this happens with all our families. They all are able to actually do something creative while talking about some tough stuff, as well as looking at their special superpowers that they hold as a family. As all the three girls attended a Catholic school, the conversation at this particular time about spirituality developed between the girls and dad. It was clear that as I observed and listened to the family, that the girls had an idea of what the church's position on sin and how this would stop you from getting into heaven. Dad was quick to fob off to his kids and his family that his concerns, he wasn't really concerned about it, and that he was a good person. I noticed that this was a particular challenge for Dad, and I honored the family's dialogue by letting Dad know that if he needed to, he could explore his beliefs around spirituality with our spiritual care coordinator. This is a piece of art that they created together. Next slide. On this particular day, Rebecca was bubbling with anticipation to come to counselling. This was our third session together. And Rebecca chose to engage in what we call here as Santre play. Santre is a creative expressive modality that uses symbols to illustrate the client's internal world. In this session, she was able to reveal her family relationships and dynamic. Rebecca was trying to make sense of what was happening in her world. For example, she moved the symbol for her dad from outside of her boundary, which is symbolized with the blue beads, outside of her boundary, and felt that it was more comfortable having him inside it. So again, wrestling with and trying to process and figure out or make sense of dad's position in the family. Now, not only has he got a diagnosis, but he also has a new relationship. Is he in this part of the family, or is he in this part of the family? And just trying this, and Santre helps them figure that out. Next slide. This particular slide, or this particular artwork, actually caused some controversy within the office at Hospice and our Family Services Department. Controversy in the fact that what I did here was I drew a landscape and she drew her dad in bed in IPU. The reason why there's controversy is because for me being an adult, my drawing was in quoted, you know, inverted commas, was somewhat better than Rebecca's. And so there was a sort of a power dynamic there playing out. But in the context of the relationship and rapport building and what was happening in the moment, there was an intention for me to be able to actually connect with Rebecca without using any language at all. And so just by drawing together, it was completely unevasive, and she was happy to engage in it. And I think the outcome proved that it was okay to do this particular intervention. So here in session four, here Rebecca had been given the news that her dad was going to eventually die. The above drawing was Rebecca's first drawing, which is above the other two, shows her trying to figure out with the wonder of death and the fantasy of dad being in his special cave. She's got a unicorn at the entrance of the cave to protect dad and protect the cave. And spiritually, dad is seen here in this picture as a ghost. These pictures were drawn early in our therapeutic relationship where rapport was being built. And I'll just sort of share some of my notes in this particular from this particular session. Rebecca came to counselling feeling very insecure. She was clingy with mum and requested that mum stay in the counselling session with her. As I was talking to her, Rebecca was curling up in a ball and hiding behind her hoodie. After some discussion and how she was feeling, the client was able to take part in a visual art exercise and draw her dad in spirit form with diamonds and unicorns. The client talked about her spirit drawing as sometimes hiding. After some questions, some open questions, Rebecca began to hide behind her hoodie again. The client did not want to go any further with counselling at this stage, but she voiced that she did not want to leave the counselling room. I chose to see if the client wanted to draw with me to finish, and I promised her that I would not be talking about the tough stuff, just drawing. And the client was able to draw her sick dad in a bed while I drew a landscape. As the process moved, remembering that there's no language in this, it was just purely communication via drawing, as the process moved forward, we both contributed to each other's drawing. Rebecca took the liberty to draw her dad in spirit on my landscape. The client was able to take her own personal meaning from this process, and she seemed to be a lot more relaxed after our session finished and was happy to leave the counselling room after that. Her mum was actually quite blown away by that intervention and couldn't believe how much information or how much material was coming forward for Rebecca. And I was quite surprised as well, especially when mum was in the room as well. Next slide. Okay, yeah, moving into bereavement. Part of my, some of the therapeutic models that I also use in integration with person-centered approach is using interactive drawing therapy. Using images, words, feelings, IDT, or interactive drawing therapy, is a potent therapy that has the ability to allow the client to delve deep into the subconscious. Rebecca was asked to draw something lost in this particular session. Counseling process revealed not only did she lose her teddy, Goldie, and an iPad, and again, attachment to these things, but also to people. She lost her gran and granddad. This led to an awareness of the massive hole that Rebecca had lost because of her strained family relationships and Rebecca's dad dying. Rebecca chose to surround her family with love to comfort them, and as Rebecca carried out her illustration of love, I was wondering if this was comforting for Rebecca. So you can see all her family at the bottom of this drawing, and she named them all off, and how she doesn't have any connection with them at all now, simply because of the interpersonal dynamics within the family post-death. Next slide. This particular picture was one of Rebecca's drawings in session 10. And the client is using her metaphor of the, again, as the family cave. You can see there's a theme sort of happening here with caves and you know, spirits and caves and unicorns, etc. Again, making meaning about life after death. This particular cave, this family cave, holds all the deceased family. Notice the dialogue between family members and her own personal boundary between herself and her family. You can see she's talking to her cousin, "I'm so sorry I died." She's having this conversation, and "I haven't seen you in ages." And then she's pointing out her great-granddad there as well. And obviously there's a feeling there in the bottom right-hand corner, sad. Some would say, I mean, we could say that she's actually grieving here, and these are purely hypotheses. She's going through and interacting with these people who have died. And also maybe parts of self as well. There's a bit of a theory out there with parts of self that, you know, what would it be like to actually have a conversation with yourself and find healing in that regard. But Rebecca in this session was able to create meaning through her grief and the freedom and the trust in the therapeutic relationship to express her inner world with congruence. I like she's been real in this space. This produced a counselling process where fond stories, memories and good times were expressed. And it's this point that I want to point out some of Mick Cooper's work on relational depth, and this is where this particular piece of work was exceptionally was at depth. And when we start working in that sort of space, that relational depth, time just whizzes by. And for Rebecca, she came to new closure, new awareness, and growth was the result. Next slide. So at this point, I just want to just really sort of outline the person-centered approach to care. Carl Rogers in the day was at the forefront of using empathy as a therapeutic tool. If used accurately, it can provide an emotionally safe environment where the client can grow freely. In Rebecca's case, she was able to be more confident within her relationship with her mum and express her feelings with confidence. Empathy offers a healing balm to the grieving child. New developments in neuroscience promote empathy as a way of regulating stress chemicals in the brain, such as oxytocin. Taking time to express vulnerability and feelings in a trustworthy relationship helps the client soothe and regulate their personal alarm system in the brain. The therapeutic relationship is key when supporting children. It's a relationship that connects the child to their inner healing. That being said, the child-centered therapist needs to be fully aware of their own inner child and grief process so that they can be completely present with the client in front of them. Being aware of the power dynamics that are evident in an adult-child relationship is imperative. As a counsellor, I'm wanting to give my power away for the purpose of empowering the child. Empathy, genuineness, warmth help me to do this. And not to mention, to add to that too, a huge dose of humility. As I reflect on my relationship with Rebecca, I was personally amazed at how she was able to work at relational depth. She found new personal insights and growth. Clients come to that, and especially children and young people, they do use metaphor as a language. And so with metaphor and language being the highway to the subconscious, Rebecca was able to explore her feelings. Play therapy, art therapy, interactive drawing therapy, or even just creative writing can be used as a process to process feelings behind the metaphor. While I've said it before, I need to be acutely aware of my own grief in a world. I need to be aware of my perspectives, my assumptions, my judgments, while holding on to the client's process. listening for cues that may lead to further self-understanding. Change in the child can be evidenced through regular assessment. So, in summary, children feel the grief journey as well. While holding on to different waves of emotion, an attentive adult can be supportive by being empathetic, understanding, and present. Evidence-based practice is built upon theories and research from the past. Development and attachment models give an accurate theory of understanding child's grief. The best researchable knowing is my own awareness of my own grief, losses, and trauma. A child's wisdom is always buried deep within, giving space to the sacred, and an inner psychological shifting of a child allows them to explore and reveal this amazing wisdom. Thank you for listening.